So Ali's life lessons live on, but what about boxing? Sports writing giant Robert Lipsight was 26 when the New York Times assigned him to cover the 1964 Sonny Liston Cassius Clay match. Bob, how did the fight crowd first view Ali?
Well, it's so interesting that, you know, we talk about him as the most controversial and polarizing character in sports. And that was obviously for political and social and religious reasons. But he was already polarizing for his boxing style itself. The traditionalists were absolutely appalled at the way he fought. First of all, he leaned back from punches. You never do that. You're supposed to go from side to side, called bobbing and weaving, in which the punches go over your shoulder. So immediately it was assumed that he would, you know, lean too far back, somebody would take another step and knock him out. Immediately, he allowed himself to be cornered in the ropes. But the point was that he was so much faster than any heavyweight anybody had ever seen before, that he was able to break all these rules. He was able to dance away. He was able to keep circling left against, you know, people's powerful left hooks. And as it turned out, of course, he was Mozart. He was idiosyncratic. And certainly in those early years, he could stylistically do anything he wanted simply because his hand speed and his foot speed were just so fast.
You know, I was thinking, I was trying to explain to a young man the Ali shuffle, and I tried it and I almost hurt myself. You know, the shuffling, the scissoring the legs back and forth.
Well, maybe instead of thinking of that, you should think of Michael Jackson's moonwalk. They're pretty much the same thing. He would do the shuffle. You would see the other boxer would kind of stiffen. What's going on here? And then, bam, Ali would hit him in the face. So the Ali shuffle was kind of you know, a wonderful confection. I'm not sure it was exactly a tactic of more than distraction.
Yeah. He'd float like a butterfly, sting like a bee. His trainer came up with that. But you mentioned, you know, being back against the ropes, the rope-a-dope. I mean, this was a technique when he got older. He'd just stand there and take the punches?
Well, it was done most effectively against George Foreman, an incredibly powerful puncher and someone who was, you know, supposed to pulverize him. The point was that Ali, who had been out of action for 3.5 years, now he's, you know, he's back and he's much older. That marvelous foot speed we talked about is gone. His hands are not so fast. So what can he do against a younger, bigger, far more powerful boxer? Well, what he could do was take away the guy's strength by sacrificing his own body. So what he did in the rope-a-dope was leaning back against the ropes and letting the other fighter bang away on his shoulders and arms, and unfortunately sometimes his face. But after 7 or 8 rounds, Foreman was punched out. He had nothing left, and Ali still had enough left to knock him out.
How did sports writers, I mean, you were one of the younger sports writers, but there were some who'd been in the fight arena for a while. Here comes this guy, part of his game was his lip, the lure of the lip. This is no jive. Cooper will go in five, you know. Talk about how sports writers felt about him.
Well, most of the sports writers were dismissive of him. The only reason I got to cover the fight was because the New York Times regular boxing writer didn't think it was worth his time to go all the way to Miami Beach for a 1-round knockout. So, you know, send the kid from Night Rewrite. He doesn't have much to do. So that was me. The older boxing writers, they were appalled, as we said, by his style, the way that he was kind of so breezy and dismissive of them. And also there was a great racialism involved.
Right.
Here was a young black man who was kind of disrespectful in a kind of a friendly way of all these old white men who were much more comfortable, you know, with these, quote, grateful Negroes, Joe Louis, Sonny Liston, who just seemed happy to be there and were respectful and gave you know, simple interviews and laconic answers. So it was marvelous. And I just remember in the week leading up to that fight, all I could think was, oh, I hope he doesn't get hurt too badly because I'd love to cover him again sometime. I didn't realize it was the beginning of 52 years of coverage.
Right. Is boxing over with his death? I mean, it's declined.
Well, boxing is over. Yeah, boxing is always over. Boxing only comes back when some sort of transcendent figure emerges, somebody who is, you know, so exciting or powerful or captures the zeitgeist or touches us. There hasn't been anybody like that since Muhammad Ali, you know, a fearsome person like Mike Tyson, but nobody who really touches our heart. And people are also beginning to understand there's no socially acceptable reason for boxing to exist. Why should two people, you know, go into an enclosed space and try to give each other brain trauma? The other point of view is that this has always been the realm of minorities. You know, people who did not have you know, money from dad, their only equity was their bodies. Their flesh and blood. And that's what they gave up. That's what they gave up in the ring, in sport, in so many jobs in America that no longer exist. But certainly, boxing was one of the main ways that you kind of gave your flesh and blood to make money.
Yeah, and make a name. Robert Lidsight, sports writer, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And, of course, the greatest relationship in sports broadcasting was between Ali and Howard Cosell. We highly recommend David Kindren's book, Sound and Fury. Tomorrow, two American poets on Ali the Poet. Send us your favorite poetic quotes. I will do to Buster what the Indians did to Custer. Leave them with this story at hereandnow.org.